Hello and welcome to the Racing Postcast, presented to you by Racing Post Members Club. My name's Sam Hart, and what's been it's not been the best quality weekend of racing, but there are plenty of talking points to go through on this show. This week I'm joined by the Racing Post, Chris Cook. Chris, how's the bank holiday weekend been for yourself?
Yeah, it went quite enjoyable, really. Plenty of good racing, you know, some interesting summer jump racing at Carmel, and I mean, not big fields, as has been well covered. You might not be getting that anyway at this time of year, even in a normal year, but it does sort of chime with the theme that we've had this year. But you know, just worrying about whether we get too much racing. But you know, all just the same, some really enjoyable action.
There was indeed. Yeah, I managed to get up to Goodwood on Friday evening for a lovely bit of evening's racing. And you mentioned Cartmel there. I still need to get myself to Cartmel, Chris. Have you been?
Yeah, I've been a few times. I strongly recommend it. You know, the thing that I haven't done is they obviously quite often group their fixtures together. You get sort of two or three days out of three that they race up there. What I want to do sometime is stay up there and sort of make a proper few days of it. I think that's the best way. You enjoy the countryside and the Lake District and everything, but it's a very different atmosphere from anything else, you know, quite a carnival atmosphere. Great fun, quite relaxed in a way, in the sense that, you know, it's not high level racing, you don't get that tension, but you know, just good fun.
I'll make sure I put that on the list then. Right, let's get into the show then. Part one, we'll be looking at Goodwood. Part two, we'll be looking at Beverley and Newmarket. And then in the final part, we'll have an anti-post look at the Betfair Sprint Cup coming up this weekend, as well as getting Chris's nap for the week ahead. So kicking off with Goodwood, the first race we'll look back at is the Group 3 March Stakes. This was won by Huya Mal at odds of 100-30 on. This horse slowly coming to the end of his career in the UK before heading to Australia. One more run expected, which is likely to be the St. Ledger, which is an 8-1 shot for 16s for the Melbourne Cup. Chris, what do we make of this performance?
Yeah, for all that he was obviously a very short price, there were enough things to worry about, I think. You know, if you were one of those people who sort of lumped on and tried to buy money out of it, in the end, he's just too good, isn't he? But he hadn't actually won a race since his maiden, which was 53 weeks before. He's stepping up in trip on the softest ground he met all year, which is an unattractive sort of combination. He's raced freely in the past. He's been slow to go from the stalls in the past. So, I mean, you could put all those things together and kind of imagine circumstances in which it might look a bit scary. But realistically, you know, if you were laying him, there's only one horse in the race that you had running for you, which was Perfect Alibi. And, you know, in the closing stages, Huya Mal's just had the legs of her. You know, he's a quality horse for all that he hasn't got a load of ones next to his name. He's a really sort of dogged runner-up in the Derby. And, yeah, as you've just said, you know, they've got plans for him. He's going to go for the Ledger in a couple of weeks' time. And the Melbourne Cup is the big target. His new Australian connections shelled out more than £1 million at a sale in June to get him with that target in mind.
Yeah, it was interesting to see as well Huya Mal. I was glad to hear that everything's okay with him, but after the line, something did happen. I think there was a loose shoe and there was a fantastic shot
right
that ITV had given. I don't know if you saw it, Chris, of the horse kicking the shoe up in the air. And blimey, I don't know how high that shoe went, but you saw it land about 5 seconds later. But William Hewitt got off the horse, best thing to do. But it was, look, it's glad to see the horse is okay.
I mean, that was nearly the most dramatic thing that happened, wasn't it, connected with that race? You know, and he was obviously, the shoe was bothering him. He was determined to get rid of it. He kicked out a few times and then eventually, yeah, it sailed up in the air. Like Lee Butters had said in Sunday's paper, you know, there's a problem with those feature races at Goodwood on Saturday. You know, they did not have the kind of size of field that you would hope for the money on offer or the prestige. But it's you know, it's a nice prize for them to win. They got a little bit of their money back, and it's a springboard onto the next thing. He hasn't really shown us anything in terms of his ability that would make you think he's got a better chance in the Ledger than you imagined. He was seemed to be, you know, beaten on merit in the Gordon Stakes at Goodwood the time before. the Gordon Stakes, which is working out so well. He's beaten by New London, who's odds on for the Ledger, and you know, it looks very much as though he deserves to be that. There was another horse who was further back in the Gordon Stakes, who's won a listed by 6 lengths at Windsor on Saturday night. So that is very strong form, and the Ledger, you're sort of slightly struggling to see where's the interesting unexposed improver who might shake up New London. I think that's going to be another big day for William Buick, because of course he'll be on that Charlie Appleby train favourite the weekend on Saturday.
Yeah, exciting times. The Ledger coming out the same weekend as Irish Champions weekend as well, so a good weekend to look forward to there. And most bookmakers with William Al were 8-1 prior to the March Stakes and stayed the same. I don't think we learned too much, but stayed the same with most bookies at 8-1 for the race. But looking forward to seeing him come out in a couple of weeks' time. Now on to the next race we'll look back at, which is the Group 2 Celebration Mile. This was won by Jadumi on what was some weekend for William Buick. 8 winners across the Saturday and Sunday card, 5 of them coming on the Saturday. Chris, this was a really disappointing Group 2, but the Crisfords probably wouldn't have minded the result they came out with.
Well, definitely not. They've got a 1-2. And so, yeah, I think that as a trainer, that enables you to forget all question about whether it's a disappointing field or not. Keep yourself in the best company and your horses in the worst available, isn't that the thing? And they found a nice prize. Jadumi's an interesting horse. I mean, you know, he's coming to the end of his four-year-old year. You could say he's still really quite unexposed. He ran in a Group 1 as a juvenile. He was third at Saint-Cloud in the Criterium International behind Van Gogh. Yeah. And he's only been seen 3 times since then. He's sort of nearly unknown. If you only paid attention to British racing, you know, you'd barely know who Jadumi is, because the last time you'd have seen him was when he was third in the Ben Marshall at the end of last year. And before that, it was Wolverhampton in September 2020. I think he didn't start favourite, but, you know, with the full benefit of hindsight, you got to say he was the best horse in this race. He's got the run of the race, you know, the best jockey. Mita Sabek's been sent off favourite and has run disappointing if you run him at even money. But he's been beaten favourite now 3 times in a row, and, you know, there's something to worry about, I think, with that horse. He's not run to the level of ability that at least some people were expecting. In the end, Jadumi's, you know, had a very straightforward ride. He sort of sat second behind his pacemaking stablemate Finest Sound. And it's been close at the end. He's only won a neck, but it always looked to me like he was going to go past when he was asked. So that, you know, it's on to the next thing. And, you know, he's won a Group 2 now. You think they might want to have a go at a Group 1. I just had a quick message with Simon Crisford before coming on here. He's obviously he's got an entry at Leopardstown in the Boomerang Mile, which is coming up pretty soon. I mean, that's a week on Saturday. He said there's also, you'll have an entry in France, not specify which race that would be for. I mean, I guess it might be is it the Moulin?
Yeah, that'd be the next one, wouldn't it?
So anyway, we'll find out. The horse has come out well from the race. It'd be a little stretch of the imagination at the moment to see him winning a Group 1, but you know, I think they've got to give it a try. And he seemed to appreciate, you know, having a bit of cut in the ground on Saturday there. So, I mean, you could maybe even imagine him turning up in the QE2. It feels like there might be a bit more to come from him. For all that, on Saturday's race, you're not expecting him to be a world beater. He's lightly raced enough that we might not know the full extent of his ability just yet.
I agree. I think that potentially there's plenty more improvements to come. And I had that race in mind, the QE2, potentially at the back end of the season. May just be ideal from a race meeting where you can see plenty of shocks, and you will probably get that cut in the ground in October. So could be an ideal race. And I think we've got to quickly mention the jockey who rode both of the winners that we've discussed so far, Chris. William Buick, he's outstanding, 118 wins this season. I mean, Holly Dahl sitting there in second place in the jockey championship on 73. So he's well clear, but he is just some jockey, isn't he?
Yeah, what I like about this season for him is the way he's just, you know, he's completely taken over, really, hasn't he? Eight winners at Goodwood over the weekend from 12 rides. He had five winners on Saturday. That's his second five-timer of his career. The first one was at Newmarket 6 weeks before. You, when you're riding five winners on Saturday on a regular basis, you really become the dominant flat jockey, haven't you? And that you couldn't be taking that for granted. You know, even like a year or 2 years ago, I wouldn't necessarily have said that he was heading in that direction. So obviously he's benefiting from the absence of Oisin Murphy this year. And you could say that, you know, he ought to be winning the jockey's title race in these circumstances. But it was never in doubt, was it really? I mean, almost from the word go, he's gone off in front and never looked like being challenged. And the sort of support that he's getting, I think you can say that he's the guy that trainers and owners want to have on their side in any circumstance. So when Oisin comes back next year, it's obviously going to be a contest between the two of them. But, you know, William Buick is a significantly bigger powerhouse now than he was the last time that Oisin was riding against him. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. And I give Buick plenty of credit, you know, for the work ethic that he's showing. He's been talking recently about how he's in better physical shape than he's ever been. And also to his agent, Tony Hind. He's been sort of known as a kingmaker of jockey's agents, and has been sort of determined from the get-go to get his man this championship, and to provide him with as many good opportunities as he can. That's a combination that's working really well.
Yeah, what I love is that William Buick, obviously he has the retainership of Charlie Appy and Godolphin, and he rides plenty of winners for them. But as Chris mentions there, Tony Hind is getting William Buick plenty of really decent spare rides. And I like it when a jockey, sometimes they're winning on horses which potentially, you know, they shouldn't be winning on. I mean, there were a couple of times, maybe the two-year-old filly on Saturday, was it Fairy Cross? Potentially might not have been the best filly in the race, but I do think that William Buick just rode the field to sleep. I mean, that just shows how good he is, Chris.
Yes, I mean, I think with the two races we discussed earlier, in the end, you could say that Jadumi and obviously Huey Mal were the best in those races. But yeah, there were other races where he's definitely maximised the horse's chance. I mean, just the fact that he's often landing on the horse with the most obvious chance shows the regard in which he's held. So, you know, there's that aspect to it as well. Yeah, and he's not making mistakes either. That's the crucial thing. You know, anyone can get on a fancy horse, but then you've got to not muck it up, which is it's not to be taken for granted. So no, he's doing great, and he's showing real durability as well, because you know he's covering a lot of ground this season.
Yeah, congratulations to William Buick on a fantastic eight timer across the weekend. Really fantastic to see. Now let's move on to a topic that I don't want to talk about for too long, Chris, because we seem to talk about it every week nowadays, but just with regards to the field sizes that we saw from Goodwood at the weekend. Now, some may have read Lee Mottishead's piece that he put out over the weekend saying that some of these group races, especially for kind of the middle distance flat horses, there's too many around at the moment, and some of that prize money could be invested elsewhere. I mean, we, like I say, Chris, we say it every week, but it's hard not to stand by this.
Yeah, well, I'm afraid it is just the case. And there is also a fashion element, you know, races come in and out of fashion. Evidently, you know, I'm sure I remember a time when the Celebration Mile was more popular than it seems to be now. But there are other races around for that type of horse. Too many, really. I mean, and we've been saying this for a while at the top end. There are too many opportunities. It's too easy for the good horses to avoid each other. And you end up with odds on favourites who duly win, which is, you know, no good for the betting industry. And not all that thrilling for spectators either. So Adam Waterworth at Goodwood has spoken to Lee quite frankly in that that piece that Lee wrote on Sunday about how, you know, those field sizes are disappointing for the amount of money that's being pumped into those races, and any race course would have to ask if that's the best use of its money. The March Stakes, I gather, is going to have even more money behind it next year, but beyond that, there's a question about what happens. I think just speaking more broadly, you know, in terms of the whole sport, I think there has to be some joined up thinking about creating a more attractive program one that brings the best horses together more often, and avoids or minimizes these situations where you end up with small fields and obvious favorites that that duly win. I mean, you can see why that's attractive to trainers and owners, of course. And there's always an element of allowing a horse to build up through his career. You know, he needs experience on the way to the serious tests. But we've just got too much of that just now. And evidently not enough horses to support the fixture list that we have. So there's going to be industry level talks next month, aimed at mapping out some kind of strategy, and hopefully that leads us somewhere decisive.
Yeah, hopefully that strategy that we see over the coming months will, yeah, be positive news for the racing industry, and I'm sure that, you know, things will be done to try and avoid these situations with the lack of runners in some of these big group races. And across races, like Chris says, across the whole of the UK, we're seeing smaller field sizes, which is a worrying time. But we'll wait and see in a couple of months to see how things go. That's it for a review of Goodwood. Then join us in just a few seconds to hear Chris's thoughts on the racing from Beverley and Newmarket.
Are you football crazy? Then Racing Post's new podcast could be just for you. Mark Langdon's Bet Clubs brings all of the best football betting insight from Racing Post's top football tipster. As well as that, Mark will be joined each week by a friend from the betting community to guide listeners through their best bets. Simply search Mark Langdon's Bet Clubs on your podcast app of choice and listen today.
Welcome back to the podcast with Sam Hart and Chris Cook. Beverley's feature race this weekend was the Beverley Bullet. This was won by Clive Cox's Tis Marvellous for the second time. Came into the race off the back of a 10th placed effort in the King's Stand Stakes. A long break this, Chris, for this horse, but did it nicely.
Yeah, and they say it's been the plan the whole year, which would make sense. You know, this is obviously a race he won last year. I think he's the third horse to win the Beverley Bullet in consecutive years. And they want to try and make him the first to win it three times. So you have to come back next year at the age of nine. I mean, we've got to say, to have an eight-year-old that's still racing with this kind of enthusiasm, I think that was the 42nd race of his career. That's just a testament to the skills of Clive Cox. You know, it's hard to keep a horse, you know, running lots of times year after year, and keep them sweet and enthusiastic. I mean, this horse goes all the way back. I was just looking at his career a bit earlier. You know, in his second season, he was running in really good races behind the likes of Blue Point and Caravaggio and Batash. Yeah. You know, those horses aren't still racing, but he's keeping on going. He's flying the flag and, you know, giving his owners another really big day. It made me laugh a little bit because, you know, they were talking about where he goes next. And one of the owners said, well, you know, he's entered in the Prix de l'Abbé, but if he wins that, he can't run in the Bullet next year. So, I love that. You've got to sort your priorities, don't you? And Beverley evidently is more enticing than Paris for them. That was terrific to see. I mean, yes, a bit of a step down in class, wasn't it, from the last day. He's run all right in the King's Stand. He was only beaten 8 lengths. You know, he wasn't particularly fancied that day, and I guess the races has helped set him up for Saturday in the big event.
Yeah, lovely to see Tis Marvellous win the Bullet, and by the sound of things, we may be seeing the horse running the Bullet again next year. A great old veteran for Clive Cox, and yeah, congratulations to all connections. Now, Newmarket, they held the last meeting of the year from the July course. One of my favourite courses to visit this, Chris. Their big race there was the Listed Hopeful Stakes. This was won by the well-backed Sam Maximus, James Horton's first listed success. John and Jess Dance were the owners here. And I think they were quite busy at the sales during the week, John and Jess Dance. I think, by the sound of things, we're going to be hearing a lot more of James Horton over the next few years, Chris.
Well, and deservedly so, because, you know, for a startup trainer, he's done fantastically well. You know, he's a guy that I think basically very few people would have heard of at the start of the year. And, you know, it's quite a thing for you know, owners of the caliber of the dances to be putting all their faith in him. So, you know, he's had his very first runners in March. And he's had winners every month since, and he's got a 19% strike rate, and plenty of winners. And then, yeah, as you say, that first taste of listed success with Sam Maximus in the Hopeful on Saturday. I should think they're all delighted, and naturally enough, those owners with their deep pockets are looking to support him again for next year. Sam Maximus, I think that, you know, maybe the first time cheek pieces have helped. You know, this is a horse with, you could see a bit of back quality to his form. He was only beaten half a length in the July Stakes in summer last year when he was with Tom Daskin. Hadn't gone quite so close to winning this year, but down in a class again. He was at a high level in the summer. He was in the Commonwealth Cup, wasn't he? That Group 1 for 3-year-olds at Royal Ascot. Ran okay in the Hackwood at Newbury in July, and then taking another step forward on Saturday. He got a bit desperate in the end, but, you know, he's held on by a head.
Yeah, Sam Maximus, a decent performance. And like we say, James Horton, definitely a trainer to keep your eyes on, not just over the next few years, but even the next few months, because he has plenty of winners all over the country. So do look out for James Horton in your race cards. And I suppose we should have a quick word here, Chris, on the Town Plate, which is a great tradition there at Newmarket. This was won this year by the Jockey Club Partnership Account Manager, Laura Gibson-Brabazon. It's a great, like I say, a great tradition. And even seeing Colin Moore at the age of 80 riding in this race, I think he actually won a race under rules back in 1961. So fair play to him. It's just a great opportunity for a lot of people here, Chris.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the Town Plate is all about history and tradition and, you know, that connection with racing's past, isn't it? So, you know, we've got Colin in the race, who's been around forever. And I think it was run in the memory of Julie Cecil this year. You know, she won the race, I believe, in 1959, when she must have been very young indeed. And yeah, a great thrill for Laura. I mean, again, a very close finish. I think she probably ended up on the wrong side. You know, her horse sort of was tiring the closing stages, went over to the far side, and has just held on in a desperate photo finish from last year's runner-up. I forget the horse's name, but he's managed to get beaten about the width of a cigarette paper this time. So maybe next year. But I mean, yeah, great fun for all concerned. And the winning jockey now has 100% strike rate. I think she just exchanging messages with her on Twitter. I think she got a real taste for it, though. And, you know, Christian Williams has provided her with that winner, and she might be on to him, you know, looking for more rides in that type of race. Good honour. I mean, it's just terrific. It's a reminder of the thrill of race riding, really, and, you know, how intoxicating it is to be involved in something like that. When you see her reaction, she was just so chuffed to have got that success at a track where she works, you know, where quite often in her day job.
Absolutely, and big congratulations to Laura, and big congratulations to Christian Williams as well. Maybe we'll hear more from Laura in the future. We'll just have to wait and see. That's the racing review complete then. We're going to be back in just a moment for a look at the weekend coming up, which includes the Betfair Sprint Cup, as well as getting Chris's best bet for the week ahead.
Stay ahead of the field with Racing Post Members Club, featuring unlimited access to the Racing Post digital newspaper, exclusive online content, replays from all UK and Irish racecourses, and more. If you're a new customer, you can use the code POST22 to get 50% off your first 3 months of Members Club Ultimate. Head to racingpost.com/postcast to find out more.
Welcome back once again to the postcast with Chris Cook and myself, Sam Hart. This weekend coming up, hosts the Group 1 Betfair Sprint Cup from Haydock. 6 furlongs in what usually is a decent sized field. The betting currently looks like this: Minzal 9-2, Naval Crown 6-1, Emiratiana 7-1, Rohan 9-1, and double figures bar these. Now, Minzal was last seen second behind Highfield Princess and the pre-Maurice de Geese. Highfield Princess, she's not going here, but obviously she won the Nunthorpe only a week or so back. And Naval Crown was fifth in that race and obviously second in the July Cup. Look, there's a few cases that could be made here, Chris. Who do you like at this stage?
Yeah, it's interesting that the betting market is completely going with Minzal over Naval Crown. They were both in the Dover race that Highfield Princess won, the Prix Maurice de Geest. In the end, Minzal's been a close second and Naval Crown sort of faded into fifth. But, you know, it's another half a furlong further than this race. And it was on good to soft. Now, ordinarily, this Haydock race I would associate with quite soft ground. Usually up there on Merseyside, the ground is going by this stage of the year. But looking at the forecast, I don't think there's any way it's going to be good to soft. It's going to be good, and it might even be drying out if the forecast stays the way it is. So it'll be very atypical ground. And I think that's going to help Naval Crown and maybe not so much Minzal. I'd say that, 5-1 Naval Crown is a better bet than 7-2 Minzal. Charlie Appleby for a start. So
can't do anything wrong, can he, Chris?
He's going to run his race, and he's got masses of top class form in the book. Has Naval Crown. I mean, he's obviously won the Platinum Jubilee at the end of Royal Ascot in the summer there, and he was only beaten by Alcohol Free in the July Cup. So yes, the French race hasn't worked out so well for him. He's run about half a stone below what he'd shown in his previous two races, but I would back him to bounce back here. That being said, it's you've still got, I think, 18 horses left in at the 5-day stage. I would like to wait and see, I think, to see what actually is going to turn up before committing fully to a 5-1 shot. Because there's even horses like Jubawi Legend, who's an improver and a bit unexposed. He's just won in Germany there on Sunday. I know that the owner was keen to at least consider going to Haydock for this. He feels that he's got a horse going the right way, and it might not be such a bad thing to go back to the well again. So we'll see what happens there. There's some really talented horses in there. Emirati Anna, Kinross, Rohan, Gobert's Goal, Brad the Brief. Horses that on their day, you can imagine them winning a prize like this. It's going to be highly competitive, and because it's going to be top of the ground, it's going to be a proper sprinting spectacle.
Okay, Chris is going to wait until close to the time to potentially have a bet on the race, but at this stage does like the look of Naval Crown. I think I'll be sticking with last year's winner, Emirati Anna. Won this last year coming off the back of a second in the Nunthorpe. Seems to be going down the same sort of route here. And look, Atzini's going to be on board. And I mean, he's riding out of his skin this season. I've been really impressed with Atzini. And I think 7-1 may be a fair price for this horse to go back-to-back in the Betfair Sprint Cup. So there we go. Hopefully, Chris and I may have found your winner there. But before we go, we need to try and find one more winner for the week. It's nap time.
This will not be beaten.
Chris, come on, give our listeners a horse who may just be winning this week.
So the one I've settled on is Cumulonimbus, who's in the 4:36 at Newcastle on Friday. Obviously, we don't have final decks for that race, but I'm hoping that his name will still be there when we do. This is a horse I expected better from him at Southall last month. They put a hood on him. It was his second time in a handicap. And I'd say the hood, if anything, has worked too well because he's basically gone to sleep in the back stretch. And Callum Shepherd's had to work really hard to get him going again. I thought he was just beginning to pick up when he was eased down because he just wasn't going to get involved in time. He's a Charlie Fellows three-year-old. Charlie does very well with his three-year-old handicappers. And actually, the three-year-olds from that yard are scoring this month at a rate of 29%. I think he's pretty unexposed. He's one of those horses that you can see he was going to need a bit of time and experience. I think he's going to be ahead of his rating when he gets his act together, which hopefully will be on Friday. They've come back down in distance, and I think part of the thinking there is that they'll be able to dispense with the hood. It won't matter quite so much if he races a little bit freely, but he settled okay, I thought, in the early part of that last race. So I'm hoping that they'll get rid of the hood and we'll see a more sort of professional display from Cumulonimbus on Friday. He's got it in him to win a race.
And there we go, Cumulonimbus, 4:36, the final race on Friday at Newcastle. Now that's it for the podcast. Big thanks to Chris as always. Any big plans for this week or the weekend coming, Chris?
Big plans? And no, I've got some stories to write, so I'm going to cozy up with my computer and get typing.
There we go. And you can catch Chris on the front page as well. Do check that out on the Racing Post YouTube channel. That will be up on by the time this is uploaded. So do check that out. That'll be Lee Mottershead hosting that show. A great show, looking over some of the big stories from the week gone by. And you can join Bruce on Friday for this weekend's podcast, where hopefully him and the panel can guide you in the way of some weekend winners. Do subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to us on. And as always, if you are having a bet, remember to gamble responsibly. Thanks for listening.